Special Edition.
Welcome to the Giddy Up Podcast Special Edition. My name is JT. I'm joined, of course, with Don Elgin and our special guest for tonight, the AFL superstar and media personality and legend and all-round good bloke, Michael Roberts. Robbo, welcome.
Hello, boys. Donnie, good to see you. JT as well. Beautiful. I haven't had an introduction like that for a long time, but what were we, 1 foot on the podium or 1 foot beyond the podium, Donnie? One of the last times I saw you, your book must be selling millions.
Mate, I tell you what, I'm really surprised that I made time for you tonight, Robbo. Actually, I've been going so well. No, it's funny, great, mate. It is really good to see you. And I tell you what I'm really liking about tonight. He's the first thing I want to do is give JT the, well, a big cuddle, because I said, mate, leave one thing for me for Robbo. And clearly he stayed well away from male model, mate. Now, every week I call JT the male model and he's dead set up with a bit of competition tonight.
Mate, it's not competition. I know where I stand. Robbo's got me well and truly there. He's a good-looking unit even this day, Michael. What do you do?
Now, when you hit 60-plus... you're counting every day on your finger. So the modelling days were a bit conflicting in the fact that I was playing league football at the time. So players from the opposition knew that I was doing sale of the century. Mind you, I was the world champion fridge stroker at the time. and we did the five shows on the Wednesday. So there was some Collingwood blokes and a few other opposition blokes that knew exactly what was going on. So every time you dived into a pack, bang, they'd throw a left, open your eye and your mouth up, and then they'd say, now go and do sale of the century. So they knew exactly what they were doing, and I had to be stitched up at Channel 9 several times just to go and do the show. It's amazing what makeup can do.
Well, I'll tell you what, Robbo, tonight I don't know how many hours you're in the makeup chair before you come on with us tonight, but you've scrubbed up a treat, mate. You've got a bit of growth going on too.
Have a look at me. I've got horse shit, cow shit all over me. I've just taken my hat off. You know, I've just been on the horse. So I am seriously John Dutton out of Yellowstone.
That's got a bit of bloody Brokeback Mountain about it there.
See, I am trying to go tough and rough and you're throwing me back into that. Jesus. So just got off the horse. So this is where I am, down the peninsula. Can't believe we still can't play golf. We can surf down here, but at least we can ride the horses as well.
Mate, I'll tell you what. Now, speaking of the horses, how many horses you got, Robbo?
I've got four horses on the property and a little bit of cattle and just near the water. So very lucky down here to be isolating, but plenty of work to be done. And then still involved with Triple M and the footy and goodness gracious, what have we got? We've got Fitzroy, Richmond and St Kilda still in the finals, my three sides.
I tell you what, you got around a little bit. I mean, you're known for being a Saints man, but you certainly had a finger in a couple of other camps. Now, we'll get to footy. I want to get into a bit of life on the farm, because obviously you got rid of Melbourne and you're not spending anywhere near as much time now in Melbourne. You're literally getting your hands dirty. Now, going from that male model buddy lifestyle, it's all glitz and glam and makeup, to horse shit. Like, yeah. Which one are you most at home with, mate?
I am better off just smothered in horse shit, seriously. Got my face in the trough. Love the rough and tumble of it all. Seriously, love it. And the fact that you've got that freedom, you're breathing in beautiful oxygen, you're standing under the stars, you have a couple of red cans after a good day's work, and nothing could be better. On the chainsaw, open fires. But I do like to sneak back to do my work in Melbourne. I do miss Melbourne. So you can't lose those stripes, but very happy, happy down on the coast.
And so what about childhood, mate? Where was the childhood? That was all down Melbourne, wasn't it?
No, that was in Beaumaris, Black Rock. So just around the corner from St Kilda Footy Ground. So I was zoned at St Kilda, but also played under the father and son rule. So I played all my junior football at Beaumaris and then went to the under-19s at St Kilda. Mind you, I was signed under the father and son without actually signing a piece of paper, because I was conceived on the rub-down table in the junction, in the changing rooms at the Junction Oval the night the old man won the Brownlow. So I'm a Brownlow baby. He just swept the decks with the liniment and bang, I was born 9 months later. Seriously.
Talk about it, Brownlow jeans, mate.
I'm a Brownlow boy and was always playing for red, white and black.
Oh, love it. That is sensational. Now, tell me, I'm going back to the property. I'm going to get the footy. But on there, what are you doing? Like, are you breeding cattle? What's the property? I know there's always work to be done. What are you doing?
Yeah. No. The girls enjoy the horses, and I've always loved the horses. My man had a farm down at Dean's Marsh when we were growing up as kids, and we always had a house at Lawn, right on the coast. And unfortunately, lost both in the fires, the big fires that came through. But Dad still got his place down at Lawn. Sort of got in my blood that, you know, so lucky. I remember my old man standing in the middle of this property saying, I'm envious. And I said, why? And he said, because you got your bit of dirt and I'm sitting back in Beaumaris sort of thing. So it means a lot to him and it means a lot to me. So that was instilled, the good feel to get up in the morning and just appreciate a little bit of land and just the freedom. I suppose, and because, as you know, we all have to whack the suit on and present, tie up, entertain people from 300 to 1300. You know how it works, and you've got to be on your game. You've got to do your work. Your homework's so important, and you've got to entertain. You've got to be up all the time. This you can actually get back down again and suck the roses, smell the roses, and suck it in. I love it.
Mate, if I didn't have that intervention order out from you, I'd be on my way down there now. But it's I love it. Like, my heart's beating out of my jumper at the thought of you standing out there under the stars after a hard day and just buddy putting a couple back in and just loving life, mate. It's great to hear.
Well, yeah. Some of the best Pinot in the world's down here on the peninsula. Stony is just up the road. So that's the best Pinot you can get, and that's just beautiful. Vintage.
I think we've lost JT. He's heading out. He's bloody on his way. Don't what do you dress out there, Robbo? You won't get rid of him.
Mind the odd drop. Now, Robbo, obviously we are going to talk about footy. Don't worry, because we're dying to know a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm sure if there's anyone who's got some great footy stories, there's no doubt it is bloody you. But tell us a little bit about your family life first. So who are you down on the farm with? Because you know Don really well, but for our listeners that don't know you, and obviously we haven't spoken much, we did have a brief but memorable chat at Don's book launch, and I'm sure it's down as one of your highlights of your career. But tell us a bit about your personal life, mate.
Married yesterday was my 32nd wedding anniversary, so I got married in 1988.
Congratulations, mate. That's bloody awesome.
At Fitzroy. I've got three beautiful daughters, and Charlotte, she's just given birth, so I've just now become a grandfather.
Oh, congratulations.
Which not too many people know.
Awesome.
So Oliver Arthur Roberts. So right. Charlotte, then I've got Amelia in the middle. She's down at Torquay, down on the Surf Coast, and we're Phoebe. We have Phoebe. She's an actress and landed a bloody good part in a series coming up that I can't tell you too much about, but that's going to be global. She's a bit of an artist, so she's got the old man's flair, and my lovely wife, Andrea. So I'm surrounded by girls. The only boy I've got is a couple of horses and a dog.
Mate, I'll tell you what, that's more than enough. Any man who can go through life being surrounded by a beautiful wife and three daughters, I know the feeling, Robbo. We share that, and it's a wonderful space to be in every day. Now, on the acting side, like, you are an entertainer, you're always entertaining. Is that something when you were a kid, were you up, buddy, in front of the mirror? Were you out performing? What was the childhood like of Michael Roberts?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't up front. I remember being in a school musical at Melbourne High School, and then year 12, and then having to run out, and we won the AMCO Herald Shield, the first one, and Dale Waitman and Mark Lee played in that side. Actually, we were very lucky. We had a lot of league stars that went on, and they all went to Melbourne High. So we had a fantastic football side. And then, that was the only introduction to the stage that I had. But I was nearly run over by a lady walking out of school, and she stopped her car, and her name was Fran Scotting. And she said, listen, I'm sorry, I nearly ran you over. By the way, here's my card. I'd like you to come to the office and I'd like you to model for me. And that was my first introduction. So I'd just started playing league football, and then all of a sudden I was throwing into the modelling caper. So I modelled my entire football career. And because of the football, I reckon that was springboarding me into various jobs. And then when I landed the TV job on Sale, that's national. So that was just the perfect tick for me. And that was good work, the easiest money I've ever made. And so much fun, met so many people, so many great people, and that got me used to the TV lights, seriously. So got to go into that Channel 9 studio and understand the cameras and a producer, and then having to sit there with Brian Naylor and Jennifer Kite and Sir Eric Pierce and Peter Hitchener and read the news, all it sort of became second nature in a little way. So I was very lucky of my introduction. To be able to be picked up by Channel 7. So I did 7 years at 7 and 14 or 15 years at Channel 9 on TV, still doing the radio.
So if the kids are listening to this podcast now, we don't recommend that you jump out in front of a moving car to try and get your modelling break. It doesn't happen to everyone. And Michael, a lot of people know you obviously from Sale of the Century, and that's a fascinating story about how you got your modelling break. How did you get to the Sale of the Century gig? Did it just come off the back of your modelling, or did someone go, you know what, we want to put you on TV now, mate, or what happened?
I think I got a lot of work, camera work and catwalk stuff and commercial. And because of that, Fran was the one who actually suggested that I try out and go for the TV job. So I walked in there and they looked at me and said, right, you're it. Bang. You need someone to jump on a surfboard or walk out of a sauna or pretend they're in Italy sucking on some sort of cocktail. So that was me. And I went for about 4, 5, 6 years it could have been on Sale.
Mate, if Fran's still about, I can tell her which street I'll be walking out of. And,
you know. Great lady, Fran. She's a great lady, mate.
Oh, it's fantastic. Jill
Beam was the one. She was the witty, had a little sort of fun side to her. I loved Delveen Delaney. She made me go to work.
Do you reckon there's a place for Sale of the Century back in today? It had such huge ratings. Everyone watched it growing up, and that sort of everything seems to have had a rebirth except that.
Yeah, it's went for so long. It's a bit like World of Sport. They said it was only going to go for 5 or 10 years, then went 15, then it went 20, and then 25, and it was extraordinary, the fact that it just rated. And the 9 News, too, it blended beautifully in that time slot. So the two worked for sure.
I remember we'd sit around the table and Dad was always our buddy. You know, he was the brains trust of the family, of course. And, of course, Kerry Young was a pretty an absolute sensational brainiac there. Now, Robbo, how often were you there, like, pretending to model but in actual fact sharpening up your skills? How many of those questions you get right and how many you just go, oh, I just won't say anything here? Were you pretty clever? No, did you get it?
The too hard basket, mate. I was busy enough just getting the suit on so I could escort the lady onto the actual stage. And then if I was in the first gift shop, I had to strip off and then get in the Speedos, make sure that I was on the right side of the camera for the stand-up board or something, you know. So that was my intelligence in those days with regards to Sale of the Century. I didn't sit there and answer the questions, but I said, too many other big things to worry about.
And I hear you, mate. Well
did you take it personally, Robo, when they didn't buy something from the gift shop?
Absolutely. I'm pissed off. Seriously, I've done all my best work trying to pump this prize up, sit there with a nice crystal set or a chessboard on a Moran furnishing, and the bastards wouldn't buy it. Believe it. Another thing too. With Sale of the Century, I did a bit of Price is Right as well. So remember Price is Right?
Yeah, you
had to go to Price is Right school. So when the velvet curtain opened up, from Turpie, the guy that was in charge of the whole thing, he'd go, and the price is right. So you had to lift, slide, and smile. So it was lift, slide, and smile. So it's the price is right. That's what you had to do. You had to go to school to get that timing right when they opened the curtain.
And, of course, it was Sean Cosgrove who did the voiceovers for that, wasn't it? I remember Sean left, he did my answering machine message for me one time. He came to my house. I did some stuff with him, and he left a great message, and it was on my answering machine at home. And the bloody landlord, she came in to do some work one day and accidentally scrubbed it. I thought, oh, no, that was some of the best bloody recording of all time.
Are you still around? You'd be able to do it again?
Yeah, well, maybe, mate. I'll tell you what, isn't it amazing? And talking about people that are still around, and I mean, you have had such an amazing career. You've rubbed shoulders with literally everybody from football superstars to, you know, to royalty, and you've interviewed so many people, mate. Of course, now as an MC, I see at more functions than I go to. It's bloody amazing, and it's awesome to see. You mentioned right before about your preparation, your homework is the key, because when you get up there, you're on. And how much prep time do you reckon you need for most of the gigs you do nowadays, like the speaking, the MC, that sort of stuff?
The mob knows. That's in my head. The mob will know. So they know if you are kidding yourself up there. Yeah. You've got to be confident, but you've also got to know your stuff. Now, Bruce McAvaney, who was my first boss at the tennis, that was my first gig, and I'll get to that, but he used to research, as you know, and still does. So instead of having four questions, have 44 questions, and there'll be a time when you use the 40, seriously. So make sure that you're prepared. Get some quirky stuff outside the box. Get one of his mates or someone, you know, just get some little bits of information that you can actually rely and pick up on. Because you've got to entertain. You can't be straight-laced. You can't be a librarian. That's crap. You've got to know your stuff. And if you haven't done the research, the mob knows. They'll sniff it out straight away. So that is the most important thing I tell any person with regards to going into this industry, especially. They'll work out the artificial. If you don't know your stuff, you're gone. You're Gonski. And that's, I pride myself on that. And Bruce taught me that.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And you should pride yourself on it too, because you do it so well. And every time I've seen you, it's always been a bloody delight to obviously I want to have a chat with you, but I also want to watch you as a fan, as somebody who really appreciates your work and how you work the room. It's very entertaining. Now, mate, the thing you mentioned, you said your first boss. Now, I know you've had a few bosses along the way. I mean, you've in all the different areas and industries, and of course you do a lot for agents and that type of stuff. Who's your toughest one? Who's the one where you go, oh, geez, I always had to get myself ready to go to work for that one? Have you ever had one that's been a prickly one?
The toughest boss, I didn't really have too many. They're all tough, and they've all become my mentors. The great Ian Johnson at Channel 9 was just an amazing bloke, but you wouldn't let him down. So you'd make sure that you'd actually study through the night or make sure you got the story right for the next day, because you just respect him as a person. John Sorrell was another hard taskmaster. And I could throw Tony Jones in there, Billy Cannon at Channel 7, to work with Bruce McAvaney was sensational. I started with Sandy Roberts and Drew Morford and Peter Landy. And I got my first gig. Peter Landy went for a run in the Australian Open, and I'm just standing there as a young kid, just finished. I'd actually done my knee again, so it was my last year. I was 28 years of age, and I'm working for Seven on Australian Open, and they were going to throw to Peter Landy in an outside court. He'd gone for a run around the Botanic Gardens. So they said, Robbo, grab his Guernsey, his blazer, Channel 7. We're going to throw to you because Mark Kratzman and Wally Masur have just won a doubles encounter out on court 23. So I go hightailing and out there. It's 40 degrees. And I've got a cameraman, and I'm thinking, what the hell is going on? My first live cross. I know Kratzman really well, and I know Wally. Two-minute cross went for about 3.5 minutes. McAvaney threw to me, and they looked after me. And we dagged around, and we got it all right. Next morning, I was in the opening day of the introduction, centre court, frying egg on a paint tin. It was so hot. So I just remember the whole thing. And then I end up sitting courtside when John McEnroe got kicked out. Remember? He went off his head and got the arse out of the Australian Open. So those sort of experiences just happen from me being Johnny on the spot.
Yeah, well done, mate. Bloody sensational. And tell me, what about the bits when you go, hang on, I know I can play footy and I go pretty well at that and I can model okay, but all of a sudden you're talking tennis and like the sports that you dabble in or have been associated with, is the list as long as my arms, mate. Have you ever found yourself out of your depth?
No, because I will read and I will investigate what I need to, Donny. You know that. I had to look after you, so I had to know you did, what you mate. Did. And I had to understand the Paralympics. I had to understand your books. And we're at the MCG, so I know all about the MCG. I played on it, for Christ's sake. My old man did. So we had some affinity. All of a sudden you've got some rapport. So if you can get that rapport, but then throw in a couple of stories and entertain the people, you've got to entertain the mob. If you don't entertain the tribe, you're Gonski again on stage. So that's a real secret. But to learn ice hockey, to go to the Asian Games and in a Hummer and go out and do the hockey in Dubai, in Doha, you know, like, or go to the Commonwealth Games in Kuala Lumpur and look after the girls' netball team and a marathon. You just do your work. You know your guns. And if a surprise kicks you in the back of the head, you've got to get up and find the information and make it interesting. So you know your basics. I love cricket. I love the football. I played water polo. I did sub-junior little athletics into sub-junior running, 400, 800, 1500, which gave me the base. But I loved all the Olympic Games and how the world ticks and became very good friends with a lot of those people. And I've been very, very fortunate to work with them. So much so, like Dean Jones. I would have done 30 gigs with Dean. And alongside with Botham and Vivi Richards and Hadley, the three knights, and AB. So they're the friendships you build up and the stories, and you can filter those stories into other gigs you do. So I'm really lucky to meet blokes like you and to be able to entertain on the microphone, having done it before, one side of the pickets to the other.
Absolutely, mate. Now, you mentioned Dean Jones, and I know that, you know, you were close with Jonesy. You got to know him very well, and obviously every time you're on stage, you're finding out new stuff about him. Obviously, the recent passing, that hit everybody for a sick knock, like it literally the real shock. And you've had a few, unfortunately, mate, of close mates, a couple of captains. Like those sort of times, they don't get any easier, do they?
No. Not at all, and they're all different. And just off the top of my head, Trevor Barker dies at 39, my captain at St Kilda. Danny Frawley dies at 56, the other captain. Shirley Strawn drives a helicopter in the side of a mountain. And now Dino, who was our best six ODI, middle batsman, aggressive, he drops dead at 59, heart complaint, hereditary. His old man had complaints as well. There was a bit of background there, but they're all different. But massive shocks, all of them. And it's difficult to get over. I still think of Barks. I still think of Dino now and Danny Frawley and Shirley and a few of those guys. Merv Nagle, blokes that weren't even my teammates. They were the opposition. But I've got probably more friends in the opposition than I have my own teammates because we turned our list over a hell of a lot too. Mind you, I've got good mates at St Kilda. That's one of my regrets, that I didn't play as a one-person team, but I loved my time at the Tigers, eat them alive, ruthless football club, loved all that, and then Fitzroy. The Lions turned into a superstar team.
And Robbo, what does, for you at 60, what does it do when one of your mates passes away? Like, I know what it does for me, and it makes me, particularly if it's around a health issue like a heart attack or mental health or any sort of a cancer, what does it do to you?
Two things. It motivates the hell out of me to get up the next morning and work my ass off. I just appreciate the fact that I can get out of my longboard at Crunchies, I can ride a horse, I can play golf, and I can work hard, and then I can do what I do in a suit. And the other thing is I go and get myself checked out. Just don't be flippant. Teddy Whitten Sr. and I are born on the same day, the 27th of July, and he sent me a Christmas or birthday card every year. And he and my old man were very close. They used to punch the suitcase out of each other. One was sent half back, one was sent half forward. And because of that affiliation and the passing of him with prostate cancer, I automatically go and get checked out from a blood test and get the glove as well, get physically tested. And that's also a colonoscopy. Make sure you do that, because there are the cancer, it comes in various forms, as we know. So why not, when you put your head on the pillow, why don't you feel safe with regards to your health? And the great unknown is a shocker. So just go and get checked. It's simple. The girls are good at it. We're terrible at it, the blokes. We're shockers. We seriously need an education in looking after ourselves.
Well, mate, I reckon you just gave most of our male listeners a bloody good education, a good reason and incentive to, you know, to pull our head out of our own butt, get out of our own way and look after ourselves. So appreciate that, mate. Thank you for that. And you mentioned your old man. Now, I know, obviously, Antarctica. I want to just touch on that. What was it like for you as a young bloke to see your dad heading off to Antarctica? Can you tell us about that?
Well, firstly, a lot of people ask, there's two questions, and one's the Antarctic and the other one is, how did you handle playing under the banner, the father and son banner, and him being a Brownlow medalist? How did you pave your way? Well, he was sent off back. I was a rover, so the positions were completely different. I treated as though people knew who I was, and that's why I wore his number, number 10, because as soon as I ran down the race, oh, that's that young Roberts. So if you're any good, they look at that. If you're no good, you get the ass. So I actually thrived on the fact that they sort of knew me, and I just had to just live up to what I believed in and get the runs on the board. Hopefully I did that. The second thing is that he went to the Antarctic, and he went there as a 40-year-old in charge of 29-minute Mawson, which is the toughest base, or probably the toughest environment in the entire world, that's on the back of your head at the moment. Mm. And the emperor penguins were there. And those creatures actually lived through the toughest conditions the world can throw up. And you've got to go down Cape Horn in 50-foot rollers. We experienced that, Dad and I. But he went down there for 2 years as a 40-year-old to look after these blokes. Not much is written about leadership. So he goes to John Kennedy Sr. and asks advice. And he said, do not favour anyone. Make sure that you do everything and let them follow you. So that's exactly what he did. It was the best advice, to get up an antenna in a 100-kilometre wind and untwine something. You do it. So that's what he did. It was fantastic. They lost two blokes down there, one at Casey and one at Mawson. So I knew there was death. So I'm 11 years old. My brother's 9 and my sister's 7. And he comes home and he says, Elwyn, I'm going to the Antarctic. She said, that's good, dear. She said, when are you leaving? Oh, 2 weeks. How long for? 2 years. So he leaves three kids, 11, 9 and 7, and a wife. That's going to test a relationship. So he comes back. He has a massive accident with Borassia, car accident that nearly killed them both, doing sports nights just out of Lismore. So he's 45. I've never heard my old man complain once. He busted his ankle in 12 places. The engine of the Merc came through and dislocated his hip, and they were both stuffed. I think there's amazing vision of Borassi on crutches in 77 in the grand final and whatever. But I went down and made a documentary, Donnie, with him, and I asked him, why did you do that? Why did you leave three kids and a wife? And he said, if I'd known that it affected you so much, I wouldn't have gone. It didn't affect me at the time, but we're looking back, it put a hell of a strain on my mum. So we had to clear that up. So we're standing on a glacier and we're both looking at each other when I asked that question. We've got tears pouring down our faces, and I've never seen my old man cry. But to me, I take that, and I take that forever. I'll be buried with that. And that's one of the softest and proudest moments of my life.
Absolutely, mate. An amazing moment to share, and for you also to be able to experience that, to have that courage to ask the question. And of course, 50 years later, it's still like you've just painted that picture like it happened yesterday, mate. So clearly it's a profound impact on you for your whole life, and no doubt how you've gone about fathering as well, of course, with your beautiful three daughters and the opportunities that have gone your way. So I really appreciate you sharing that, Robbo. That's bloody fantastic. Now, let's just dive into a little bit of footy here. So you've talked about wearing the old man's number and being little Robbo. Tell me about the St Kilda reputation was that you blokes were just party boys. You actually didn't focus so much enough on the footy. It was all about the parties. Now tell me about life off the field.
There was a bit of that, but most of that's crap. It's all myth. No, we actually had a good time.
Of course it is.
We had a good time. Seriously, when Molly Meldrum's the number one ticket holder and brings Elle McPherson, Elton John, and Elle McPherson and Olivia Newton-John to the all three of them to the game, your head's spinning. You know, it was the social club. Seriously, other teams used to go and play. Collingwood played Richmond, the MCG. Those two teams would be back at the St Kilda Disco Saturday night. They came to us. So we always were fully entertained. I know we had a bit of a reputation, the Blondes and down by the seaside and party boys and whatever. The best drinkers were Carlton and followed closely by Hawthorn. And seriously, there's some mugglers there, but they won premierships and games. The only thing we didn't do was win games and premierships. So it all filtered back to us and they got away with murder. But they were great days, the 80s. I love the 80s. I reckon it's the best era. It was Knights versus Vanderhaar. You had a bloke for the day. You had a Platten, a Schimmelbusch, a Johnson, an Ashman, a Waitman, a Wilson for the day, and you couldn't go anywhere. So your pride was to actually beat them instead of just this rotation off the boundary and then chipping around back six, and you never kicked across ground, otherwise you were dragged, all that. So I think that I was able to play in a really good era. I didn't play in a final. I played 10 years, didn't play a final. Bucks, same, he didn't play a final. But we were able to play for Victoria. And to be picked in the state side as a 20, 21-year-old was another thrill. The first game, obviously, really important. But knowing the significance that the old man underlined with playing state football was really important to me, and to wear the big V was another proud day.
And tell me, mate, the game today, you've talked about it, it is a completely different spectacle. Where do you fit best? Like, as a rover, you're a bloody running machine. Would you have made it okay today, or would you have preferred back in the 80s, back in your day?
I was a bit skinny, a bit light for the 80s, I reckon. But there was some light. Robbie Flower was light. Flea Waitman was tiny. So Jimmy Cracker was small. But they made up for it in brilliant, brilliant ways. My game was based on running, so I would have fitted into today's game. No problem. You've got to be an athlete. You've got to grunt run. You've got to, what they call is smash and split. So you drive in, you've got to get up and recover and make sure you get to the next wave of handballs, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I would have enjoyed the modern game, but it's not the game I love. I loved the contested ball and what the 80s dished up, for sure.
And how do you feel now, mate? Like, obviously, the way the finals are unfolding, I mean, the teams you've been involved with, forget Fitzroy, I mean, they've sort of done their thing. But what about, like, do you have an allegiance? So when you're there commentating, do you have a bit of a favourite spot still for St Kilda or if Richmond, or how do you feel about that?
You can't be biased. Whatever unfolds out on the ground, that's what happens. You cannot afford to get emotionally tied up when you're commentating or making comment on the game. It's a bit like the duck sitting on water. you'll be spinning underneath, but you've just got to remain nice and calm over the top. I enjoy St Kilda because of my background and what the old man did. I love the Tigers, especially the success they've had, and they were basket cases. They were rattling tin, save our skin sort of stuff. Mm. And then they come up and do what they've done with the premierships, the recent ones. And then Fitzroy to amalgamate, go North, as we know, sensational. So I was rapt for the Saints to actually make the finals, those young kids, and knock over the Western Bulldogs and win a final with that team. So now Richmond plays St Kilda. I dearly love the Saints to get up, but I can see the Tiger side coming through as well. So no allegiance to anyone, no favouritism, just enjoy the game, Donnie.
Righto, mate. Well, just that said, anyone I've worked with, they're bloody absolute front runners for the grand final. I worked with Brisbane a few years ago. They're going to win it this year, Robbo. You've heard it here first.
Do you reckon the Lions will win or the Tigers?
Oh, mate.
Lions or Tigers?
I reckon the year's made for the Lions. Like, you think about home ground advantage. I think about Sydney and the difference of being able to compete in your home ground. Yeah, just the little things. Like, on an international stage, for me, it was the simple things of all the signs being in English, you know, in your home ground. But, like, for the Brisbane, the boys playing up there, being in their routine, oh, I think it's going to count for something, mate. They're raw for the home team. That, and plus, if you think about if ever there's been a great year set up for it, and they're bloody playing good footy, I think they're going to give it a sniff. I hope they do anyway.
Yeah, it's if they're going to win it, they'll win it now. Up at the Gabba, their back six are really good. They're on ballers. You may have a Brownlow medalist there. And then pretty exciting front half as well. So, and I love Chris Fagan. He's in my Brett Ratton scenario. That lovable blokes that I think that the young blokes and all the side that they've got, they're playing for them. They are. They respect them, and it shows. So and Dimmer's got that as well at Richmond. So those three coaches, I give a big tick to. I salute them.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Now, tell me, what about, like, obviously most people play the game. You've gone into the media side of things. Was there an itch to coach? Like, did you want to go down that path but you just didn't get to it, or did you get to it? Tell us about that.
You got me back?
Got you back, mate. Yep.
Wow. Well, I don't know what happened then.
Mate, that's a gremlins. That happens all the time. JT does it. From he's got all the controls. He's
in the control. I promise it wasn't me for once.
Come on, JT. Stop pushing buttons.
Bloody got to lift my game. Did you catch the question, Robbo?
Sorry, mate. We were just saying, did you ever want to get into coaching, Robbo?
Oh, good question. There was a time when I thought about it. But I was cooked. I was cooked by the end of my career. And then having the opportunity to go into the media, I really had to make that decision. I remember Channel 7 coming to me saying, I know you've had knee problems. So I had an ACL I busted my leg in 82, did my ACL against Sydney in 83, and then I nicked it again in 87. So that was the reason why 7 approached me, knowing that I had complications. And I was really fortunate that that 7 actually gave me the invitation to go there. So I thought about it, but to go through with it's another thing, very time-consuming. I ended up working with Danny Frawley at the Coaches Association, which gave me a massive affiliation with the senior coaches. And I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed working with them. So that's another spin-off, you know, from your media side of things, your hosting, as you know. And I'm an ambassador for the Melbourne Storm. So I love the rugby league. So I do all the work for State of Origin. I remember James Packer, my phone rings at Channel 9, and I pick it up, and he goes, "Roberts?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Do you know anything about rugby league? State of Origin?" I said, "Not much." He said, "Well, learn the rules," and slams the phone down. And I thought, who was that and what was that? Then his PA rings me 30 seconds later, so I pick up the phone again. He said, "Is that Michael?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Oh, that was Mr. Packer." I said, "Oh, no shit." And she said, "Do you understand what he said?" I said, "Something about state of origin and learning rules." She said, "Yeah, she'll be doing an hour program. You top and tail it. You'll have Robbie Kearns and Glenn Lazarus with you, and good luck." And that was my first introduction to rugby league. So we did this hour show on Channel 9. And then I got to know John Rebo, Jerry Ryan, and then Ballyache, and Cam Smith came down as an 18-year-old with Billy Slater. I did those first interviews with them, and I loved the club so much. So I became an ambassador, and I followed, and they've flown me all over the place to do the grand finals and state of origin. I've had a wonderful time doing the rugby league.
Well, I'll tell you what, mate, there hasn't been many things you missed. You actually went and did some work over in Oz, over in, where was it? It was Vanuatu, and I think you'd done some work over there the year before I got there, mate. So
Yeah, about three or four times went over to Vanuatu. Hard joint to get to, especially when you had to come back to the footy, get back in time for the game. But, yeah, I had to take a cricketer, a rugby league player, and a footballer. So I grabbed the three biggest lunatics each year and took a boat to Vanuatu, and away we went. And that was like Mel Meninga and Rodney Hogg and Rhys Jones and Campbell Brown and Robbie Kern. So we had a wonderful time in the bush in our grass skirts. It was fantastic.
Robbo, with your career, you've had such a diverse career, obviously right through from the modelling and the footy and now into the TV and the radio. Is there a point, you know, we see like Bruce McAvaney seems like he's going to go forever with Dennis Committee, sort of took the foot off the brakes a bit with the TV stuff, but he's still commentating. Where are you at, mate? You still like seem like you're enjoying and loving what you're doing, or is there a part of you going, you know what, I'd just love to stick with the horses and give it all a rest for a while?
No, I love testing myself. I love the challenge and I love the research. It's I read every paper. I'm still a diary man. I can't use the laptops. I got to write things down and I read the paper cover to cover, and that's old school. I just enjoy entertaining people, meeting people. And when you look back at it, it's given me introductions to AB and Steve Waugh and Dean Jones, cricket, Viv Richards, all that, and then football, rugby league, Donnie, for instance, Paralympics. So to answer your question, to MC functions, I reckon you get better as you get older. I think, you know, Sandy Roberts, I'm just thinking of a few of the silver tops still going around. Tony Charlton was magnificent. Mm-hmm. He wrote me the most beautiful letter. I inducted him into a Hall of Fame. And there's a pro. There's someone you should follow, the great Tony Charlton. So those blokes just emceed right up into their 70s. So it's a situation, if you can control your marbles and be articulate is the word, and you can control a room. As soon as you lose the room, you give it away. But if you can control it, you stick around, I reckon.
And you're known, as we've already covered tonight, you're known for your research and making sure that everything goes to plan. But, of course, we know that in television and radio, sometimes things don't always go to plan. Have you got a moment where you can look back in your career, it was just that real oh shit moment, and now you got out of it?
1990 grand final, Collingwood Essendon. Collingwood had won the premiership. I was out at quarter time with Bernie Quinlan, and I was looking after the Collingwood huddle and he was looking after the Essendon huddle. And I saw Lee Matthews walk out into the middle of the MCG, and there was a big article in the paper about it today, actually. So Terry Danaher has dropped and knocked out Gavin Brown on the outer side. Then a blue started. Kevin Sheedy and Gubby Allen and all that have been in a fight. So Kevin Sheedy's the coach of Essendon and he's throwing punches at centre-half forward, seriously. And then I saw Lee walking across the middle. I'm thinking, I know what he's done to Bruns. So I'm talking to Don Fitzsimmons, who's the director, the producer in the OB van outside there. Get a camera. There's 43 of them. Get a camera on Matthews. He's going to belt Sheedy or do something. He took those blokes into quarter time and delivered the best speech I wanted to put my lace-up jumper on again and play. Control yourself. The umpires will be trigger-happy. And sure enough, they controlled their aggression. That was Pants Mullane and Banks and Ned Kelly. They got together. They played football. And Essendon lost the plot a bit. They kicked five or six goals, Collingwood, and that won them the final. So I go, Tony Shaw, champagne. I'm in the middle of the huddle. Collingwood, they've just won the premiership. He's up on Monkhurst's shoulder, and I hand it up. And someone stood on the cord of the microphone and pulled the cord straight out, and they've thrown it to me, and there's no words of Tony Shaw. He's yelling at me, and nothing was recorded. I thought, oh, my God. Big dance, centre stage, and nothing came out of that microphone. That was an experience that I had no control over, but I looked like a dill standing there with just this microphone and no cord. Shit, what could happen?
You're ahead of your time, mate.
That's right, wireless microphone.
And the other one was the 89 grand final. I had Yabby Jeans, who fathered me at St Kilda, virtually fast-tracked me into the side, and Hawthorn are going to – they've knocked over Geelong, and I sort of organised with Yabby to get a quick grab as we walk the middle of the MCG, big crowd, and I said, Yab, that was one of the toughest grand finals anyone has ever experienced. You're sitting on the boundary. It's all about the players. And Buchanan comes over the top and grabs Yabby and tackles him as he's answering the question. Another situation, another grand final. The interview after the game has gone completely to the pack. Nothing came out of Yabby's mouth. He just got tackled and was yelling on the ground. Unreal. Anyway.
Oh, mate, I'll tell you what, Robert, we could probably go on for a few days listening to your stories and the people the experience you've had, mate. It's been bloody awesome. Like, I've absolutely loved it. And I must admit, I have reservations in getting to the end, but we need to do that, otherwise we'll be hung, drawn and quartered. JT's put me on a bloody tight deadline. He said, mate, you've got to be wrapped up by 50 minutes, and already we're knocking on that door just about. So I want to say we're just about there, mate. Seriously, it's been bloody fantastic. But I do really want to say a couple of things. One is thanks for launching my book, Robbo. I really did appreciate it, being able to launch a book in the MCG, the Hall of in the library there. It was an amazing thing. But to have you do some research on me to really understand – you know, a bit of Paralympics and a bit of my life. I really, as a consumer of you, it was a real privilege, and I felt really grateful. So thank you, mate. I appreciate you doing that. And, of course, our friendship has stemmed, you know, on the back of that. It's certainly grown, and it is a wonderful thing. But also, too, I just want to say thank you, because I know there'll be a lot of blokes that will listen to tonight or to this podcast, and they'll take your advice. They will get checked up. They'll give themselves an uppercut and do what they need to look after themselves, knowing that, you know, your reminder was genuine, and it was a bloody good one. And you're right. I mean, a lot of ladies listen to our show as well, but like you said, they are very good at sorting those sort of things out, and we need some help, and you've helped a few blokes tonight, mate. So thank you.
Johnny, I'll leave you with this, the fact that, and you're very good at it as well, but we've got to help people. And I'm big on the charity thing, as you know, the Trevor Barker Foundation, working for kids with cancer with Challenge. We MC functions to raise money for kids with heart disease and brain tumours, and we go into the Royal Children's Hospital and we do our bit. But not enough people wear the angel wings. Not enough people do something for someone else. And we've got to... If it's just one illustration, we've got to reach out and really help people. And that's one thing that I thrive on, especially knowing that Danny Frawley did it, I know, and Shirley Strawn and Barks and Dean Jones, they did stuff for charity. And I salute them for that. Seriously, I get choked up. I get a bit emotional now talking about it. But if we can do our charity work and help others get through difficult times, if I just do that in life, I'll be a happier person, I tell you. It makes you feel good.
It does make you feel good.
That's a message. That's my message anyway.
Very good, mate. Very good.
That's a fantastic message to give everyone. And clearly, mate, you practice what you preach, because you have given a huge amount back to the community. And, you know, obviously you've built a great relationship, not just with Don, but with thousands of people all over the world. And I know every time that you do a function, you put a smile on everyone's dial, and that is not an easy thing to do, mate. And you go very well at it. So thank you for joining us and giving up some of your time tonight and getting off the farm. You can go and have a shower now, mate, and clean yourself up and get ready for the next year.
Bloody smell you from here.
And JT, feed those piranhas in that aquarium, please.
Yeah, I do need to feed them. I tell you what,
Where he hides his millions, mate. He knows.
That's where the millions go. I don't. Never buy a reef tank is the lesson for everyone else out there. Awesome, mate. Look, congratulations on a fantastic career, mate, and it's nowhere near done. So we look forward to hearing about some of the other things that you're going to do, and we'll be talking to you a little bit later in the week as well, mate, because you're going to be doing 12 rounds with myself and Donnie, which we look forward to. Bring it to our listeners soon.
So I'm going Stetson, I'm going Johnny Dutton off Yellowstone, and I'm whacking the St Kilda scarf on too. So there you go. There's the Saints.
No, he's showing his colours now. There we go. We got it out of him.
Yeah. And they take on the Tigers. They're going to be undermanned. They've lost Paddy Ryder, they've lost Carlisle with his third baby, and I think Long might be a bit stiff with that little shirt front that clipped McRae's jaw, but hopefully he gets off. Don't know about the tribunal situation, but the Saints are up against it. But, you know, this is what we do. We fly the flag.
Great work, mate. Love your work, and have a great night. I hope footy goes your way for the rest of the year, and we look forward to having a chat with you again soon, Robbo. Thanks, mate.
I'd love to see you, Donnie, and also JT. Well done.
Thanks, Robbo.